The provisions of Section 624, AITOIA 2005, were originally introduced to prevent the settlor of a trust gaining a tax advantage in situations where he or his spouse could benefit from a trust. The revenue has been seeking to extend the settlement's anti-avoidance legislation to business situations. HMRC guidance in this area was published in the February 2004 Tax Bulletin. This is reproduced as Revenue Interpretation Number 268 in Volume 2 of the Tolly Yellow Tax Handbooks. You should be aware that the Tax Bulletin was issued before the enactment of AITOIA 2005, so statutory references to the anti-avoidance rules within the bulletin are to the former legislation, which was at Section 660A, ICTA 1988. The revenue has been able to apply the settlement's rules to business scenarios largely because of the very wide definition of the word settlement. The word settlement has a much wider meaning than the word trust, and a settlement can encompass situations where a transfer of income or assets has been made without the legal formalities of a trust. A settlement is defined within Section 620 AITOIA 2005 as any disposition, trust, covenant, agreement, arrangement or transfer of assets. Therefore, a simple transfer of assets between persons could be regarded as an arrangement falling within Section 620 and thereby fall foul of the settlements legislation, in particular Section 624, if either the settlor or his spouse can benefit from the property transferred. Please also note that every time I use the word spouse in this session, I'm also including civil partners within the same meaning. Case law has established that a settlement can only be created where there is an element of bounty between the parties. Therefore, the settlor must agree to confer a benefit of some sort on the recipient for there to be a settlement. If the transfer of assets is part of a commercial arrangement and the settlor has no gratuitous intent when making the transfer, there is no bounty and therefore no settlement. We shall now look at how the revenue applies the settlement rules to businesses. The revenue takes issue with arrangements under which an individual seeks to divert income to members of his family. Typically, such family members will be spouses or children who pay income tax at a lower marginal rate than the individual himself. Such arrangements typically involve a partnership or family company where profits are spread among family members so as to reduce the overall tax liability. For example, assume a small company is run by Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones has the technical expertise and this generates the profits of the company. Mr. Jones has 50% of the shares. Mrs. Jones, his wife, has the other 50%, but she has no technical expertise in the business area and does not assist in generating income. Profits are distributed via dividends. The revenue has said that a good test of whether or not the legislation could apply is to consider, would the same payments be made to a person who acquired shares in the company at arm's length? Or is income being paid simply because the recipient is your spouse or child or some other individual you might wish to benefit? In the above scenario, the revenue has been arguing that the establishment of a company with a spouse as shareholder is an arrangement within Section 620. This is a bounteous arrangement, as the settlor, Mr. Jones, is seeking to confer a benefit on the recipient, Mrs. Jones, by diverting dividends to her to use personal allowances and lower or basic rate bands. In a business situation, Mr. Jones would not have allowed an unconnected third party to subscribe for 50% of the shares in his company, and thereafter be entitled to 50% of the profits, without that third party bringing in technical expertise and an ability to generate income. He has only allowed this to happen because the other shareholder is a member of his family whom he wishes to benefit from the arrangement. In this scenario, the revenue has been arguing that a settlement has been created by Mr. Jones from which his spouse can benefit. Section 624 will therefore apply to tax the spouse's income in the hands of the husband as settlor. Section 626, AITOIA 2005, provides an exception for outright gifts between spouses. In this case, Section 624 does not apply to an outright gift of assets between spouses, provided that A. The gift is unconditional, B. The gift carries a right to the whole of the income, and C. The gifted property is not substantially a right to income. Consider therefore a common tax planning idea whereby a husband gifts, say, a rental property to his wife. The aim is to ensure that the rental profits are thereby taxed in his wife's name and uses her personal allowances, etc. This is still bona fide tax planning and will not be caught by Section 624. However, this will only be the case if the gift is outright and unconditional, i.e., the wife is free to use the income and dispose of the property as she sees fit. In the case of Young and Pierce from 1996, Mr. Pierce and Mr. Scrutton ran a company. They were the controlling directors, and each had 50% of the ordinary voting shares. Mr. Pierce and Mr. Scrutton then arranged for preference shares in the company to be issued to their wives. Their wives did not work for the company. The company subsequently declared substantial dividends to the holders of the preference shares. The revenue argued that the transactions amounted to arrangements, and hence constituted a settlement in which the settlors and their spouses had an interest. As a consequence, the income distributed to the wives as preference shareholders should be charged to tax in the hands of their husbands as settlors. The court agreed with the revenue. In this instance, the gift of preference shares to the wives was a gift of wholly or substantially a right to income, and therefore the exclusion in Section 626 ITOIA 2005 did not apply. The preference shares did not carry voting rights and had no value. They were simply issued as a conduit through which to divert the income of the higher rate taxpaying husbands to their lower rate taxpaying spouses. Husband and wife partnerships could also find themselves caught by the settlement rules. This might be the case if a husband and wife are in partnership and one of the partners receives a disproportionate return on their contribution simply because they are a family member. By way of an illustration, Mr. Doshi is a self-employed dentist. He has annual trading profits of £100,000. Mrs. Doshi, his wife, works as a part-time receptionist in the dental surgery, earning £8,000 per annum. This is a normal commercial arrangement and is not attacked by the revenue. Mrs. Doshi's salary uses up her personal allowances and some of her basic rate band. Her salary is deductible in computing Mr. Doshi's trading profits, most of which are taxed at 40%. Assume now that Mr. and Mrs. Doshi wish to establish a partnership whereby profits are split 50-50. This will enable some of Mr. Doshi's profits to be diverted to his wife to use the rest of her basic rate band. This is seen to be preferable to having these profits taxed on Mr. Doshi at 40%. It is likely here that the revenue would attack this as a bounteous arrangement, falling within Section 624. Mr. Doshi would not, in a commercial situation, allow a part-time receptionist in his business to have a 50% partnership share. Mrs. Doshi's partnership profits would therefore be taxed on Mr. Doshi as the settlor. If a husband and wife partnership route were to be pursued in this instance, partners would be better advised to split the profits, say in the ratio 90-10, in order to more accurately reflect each partner's commercial input. Whilst this may escape attack under Section 624, it wouldn't save much tax, as Mr. Doshi's profits will still be largely taxable at 40%. Gifts of shares to children could also be caught by the settlement rules. Mr. Collis is a self-employed property surveyor. He sets up a new company and subscribes £1 for one share. His 15-year-old daughter Lucy also subscribes £1 for one share. These are the only shares in issue. Lucy works for the new company as an administration assistant during school holidays and at weekends. She is paid £4,000 per annum. Lucy's salary is commensurate for the work she carries out for Mr. Collis, so this is unlikely to be attacked by the revenue as being bounteous and non-commercial. Lucy's salary will be covered by her personal allowances. However, if the company declares a dividend, 50% of which is paid to Lucy, this will be challenged as a bounteous arrangement. As Lucy is a minor, unmarried child of Mr. Collis, this arrangement will be treated as a parental settlement, and the dividend paid to Lucy will be taxed on Mr. Collis under Section 629. Other examples of business situations where the settlement rules would be applied are given at Revenue Interpretation 268 in Volume 2 of the Tolly Tax Handbooks. HMRC's approach in applying the settlements legislation to businesses was tested in the case of Jones and Garnett, which was heard in the House of Lords in 2007. The facts in this case are straightforward and very common. Mr. Jones was an IT consultant. He ran his own computer consultancy business through a limited company called Arctic Systems Limited. He traded via a limited company as his clients wanted to ensure they were not classed as employers and would therefore only engage Mr. Jones' services through a company. Mr. Jones had therefore set up the company for bona fide commercial reasons and not in order to reduce his tax bill. The company had an issued share capital of £2. Mr. Jones had subscribed for one £1 share. Mrs. Jones, his wife, had subscribed for the other £1 share. Mr. Jones was the sole director, although he did not have a formal service contract, and his expertise generated the income of the company. He drew a small salary in return for working full-time. Mrs. Jones was the company secretary. She carried out administrative work such as invoicing and bookkeeping. She worked, on average, about 5 hours a week, for which she was paid a modest salary. The balance of any profits was distributed to Mr. and Mrs. Jones by way of dividends. The dividends were decided upon by Mr. Jones in his capacity as a director. The revenue argued that this was a bounteous arrangement, and that the settlement rules should be applied to the dividends paid to Mrs. Jones. As such, these dividends should be taxed on Mr. Jones. The taxpayers appealed, and the case was heard by the special commissioners. The two special commissioners could not come to an agreement, so the presiding commissioner had the casting vote. She found in favour of the revenue. Mr. Jones subsequently appealed to the High Court. The High Court also found in favour of the revenue on the basis that 1. There was an arrangement under the provisions of Section 620, and 2. The exclusion for outright gifts to spouses in Section 626 did not apply. Let us consider each of these in turn. First, did the transaction constitute an arrangement within Section 620? The court decided that the reason behind Mrs. Jones holding one share in Arctic Systems Limited was solely to be able to benefit from any dividends declared by the company. The judge described Mrs. Jones' share in the company as a means through which bounty will or may be channeled. As such, there was an arrangement which was bounteous and Section 624 could be applied. The arrangement was that Mr. and Mrs. Jones subscribed £1 each for their shares, Mr. Jones would work full-time for a small salary, and any remaining profits would be paid as dividends. The fact that there was no contractual agreement was irrelevant. The above still constituted an arrangement within Section 620. Mr. Jones is treated as the settlor in this scenario because, by working full-time and failing to draw a commercial salary, he provided funds for the settlement from which he and his wife could benefit. Section 624, ITOIA 2005, therefore applied. If Mr. Jones had drawn a salary commensurate with his commercial earning power, it would have been more difficult for the revenue to argue that a settlement had been created. Secondly, did the exception for outright gifts in Section 626, ITOIA, apply? The court rejected the taxpayer's claim that Mrs. Jones obtained her share as a result of an outright gift from her husband, and therefore dismissed the contention that Section 626 prevented the arrangement from falling within Section 624. Mrs. Jones bought her share for £1. It was not given to her by her husband. As there was no interspouse gift, Section 626 could not apply. Even if a gift had taken place, for instance, if Mr. Jones had subscribed for both shares, then given one share to his spouse, the judge remained unconvinced that this would have been an outright gift of a share, as the gift was only one part of the whole arrangement. Mr. Jones appealed to the Court of Appeal. The Court of Appeal allowed the appeal and found in favour of Mr. Jones. It ruled that the dividends paid to Mrs. Jones did not fall within Section 624, as there was no arrangement within Section 620. The salary paid to Mr. Jones and the payment of dividends did not form part of a structure. They were uncertain and fluid, and were the opposite of an arrangement within Section 620. Without these elements, there was no element of bounty and no settlement within the statutory definition. As there was no settlement, there was therefore no need for the court to consider whether there was an outright gift. However, the court expressed the view that there had been no outright gift, agreeing with the views expressed in the High Court. HMRC appealed to the House of Lords. The case was heard in the House of Lords in June 2007. The Lords found in favour of the taxpayer and dismissed HMRC's appeal. The Lords concluded that there was an arrangement in the nature of a settlement when the Joneses subscribed £1 each for their shares in Arctic Systems Limited. Section 624 ITOIA 2005 was therefore in point. However, the exemption for gifts between spouses in Section 626 applied, and any dividends paid by the company to Mrs. Jones should not be treated as income arising under the settlement. The dividend income should therefore be taxable in the hands of Mrs. Jones and should not be attributed to her husband as settlor. HMRC are planning to enact legislation to counter income shifting. It was originally intended that this would be included in the Finance Act 2008. However, this legislation has been delayed and will now be included in a later Finance Act. Finally in this session, a few thoughts on where we are after Jones and Garnett. It does not necessarily follow that the decision in Jones and Garnett should be applied to all companies where husband and wife are shareholders. There seem to be a number of ways to structure a company to avoid falling foul of the settlement rules. 1. Ensure both spouses play an active part. If a company is run jointly by both spouses and both contribute to making decisions and earning profits, the settlement's legislation is unlikely to apply. 2. If one spouse is more active than the other in running the business, as in Arctic Systems, ensure the active spouse is paid a market wage. 3. Structure the shareholdings to reflect the input of the spouses. For example, holding shares 90% to 10% is less likely to provoke a revenue challenge. 4. Keep the structure fluid and uncertain. This is less likely to constitute arrangements within Section 624. Finally, be aware that the revenue's views as expressed in the tax bulletin are merely statements as to how they see the law and how they will apply it in certain situations. The tax bulletin is not the law, and it is open for a taxpayer to take a different view and submit self-assessment returns on that basis. If the taxpayer decides to take a different stance, he should clearly indicate his position within the return. In so doing, the taxpayer is likely to be protected from the revenue-raising discovery assessments once the formal inquiry window has closed. This concludes this session on businesses and the settlements legislation. There is no practice question to attempt.